Hi, I'm Ben McAdams. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political middle. I'm joined by Shireen Gourbani on the left.
Hello, happy to have you with us.
And John Dougal on the right.
Hey, welcome back.
Well, let's go ahead and jump in. It's been a busy week on global and national and state, everything.
Yeah.
So first of all, let's start broad. Let's go with global.
Yes. So we have a lot of moving items, but I think two that stand out to
me.
The
war's over, right?
Yeah. If you want it.
Which one?
Yeah. So one of the things that caught my attention is Trump's sudden reversal on the demand for Moscow to declare a ceasefire in Ukraine. And the reversal here is really stunning. When we think about the way that, or when I think about the way that President Trump has positioned himself as a strong man, we are seeing nothing of the sort with the negotiations. It feels like his opinion about what is happening in the global context is whoever talked to him last. What are you seeing?
I mean, I think it's super troubling. He promised an end of the war, right? And so far that's been selling out Ukraine. And then for a moment there was an effort at a sustained like negotiation, but then he gets on the phone with Putin and completely reverses, backs away from a ceasefire. You can't end a war without a ceasefire. And, you know, I just think we have to wonder what's happening in those phone calls.
Well, it's not quite backed away from a ceasefire, backed away from his call for a ceasefire.
Yeah.
Because Putin was not going to do a ceasefire. And I think he's finding out that this is much harder than he thought. This is a really hard negotiation. And now what I'm saying is it's not even the U.S. is going to mediate. Putin just wants, you know, Russia and Ukraine to negotiate directly among themselves, which I think will go in Russia's favor. If that's what happens. And the more I think Putin wants to stall and stall and stall because he wants to just continue to weaken and weaken and weaken Ukraine. And I don't think a strong Russia is good for the U.S.
No, I agree with you. I think what's troubling here is that it is just really a pattern of a real lack of leadership. And I think we can probably churn from the lack of principle or leadership on this issue to the grift that is continuing in the Middle East. So what do you see going on there?
So President Trump traveled to the Middle East today, his first foreign trip in his second term, right? And, started off not on a good note with, as we now know, the Trump administration had reached out to Qatar about donating this luxury superjet, 747 luxury plane, to, first of all, to the United States government for the next 3.5 years, and then to the Trump library for President Trump to continue to use as his personal aircraft for the rest of his life.
Yeah.
Really troubling, a lot of ethics questions there. Certainly seems to run afoul of the emoluments clause in the Constitution that the president cannot accept gifts from a foreign power. It seems pretty clear cut. He would say that they didn't ask for anything in return, or Saturday Night Live says yet. Right.
Yes.
So, I think the grift seems to have just started there and moving on to cutting deals that benefit himself and the Trump organization while in the Middle East. Am I missing something?
I think you pretty much covered it, but John, you might have a different take on it.
Here's the part that I'll be interested to see on the plane. Is this really he's going to take the plane, or is this some way to put pressure on Boeing to deliver on the plane that they're well behind, that they should have delivered a while ago, actually two planes.
Yeah.
And so I'm kind of interested to see, okay, is he really wanting to take the plane, or is he really just leveraging Boeing to get them to deliver what has already supposed to have been delivered for two Air Force One planes?
Fair.
The other key thing is if it gets donated to the federal government, my understanding is that's okay. Now, just because it's okay, it still looks odd. But, you know, when you ask people, you know, what's something else that the U.S. government has received in the past? Well, you got the Statue of Liberty as a great example of something that stands out that was a gift from France to the U.S.
But not to the president as an individual.
But when you get to something that will go potentially to an individual, that's where it gets really concerning from my perspective.
Yeah. I just have to also add, I mean, I certainly have never been on Air Force One. I have no idea what that's like. But my sense is the amount of security and preparation that goes into creating an airplane with that level of sophistication, with that level of security, with those really critically necessary functions for national security, accepting a plane from a foreign country seems like a baseline bad idea to me.
It seems concerning because, I mean, you're probably going to have to gut the interior.
Yes.
In case there's listening devices or other
exactly.
things like that.
I know.
And then you've got to have certain security features in the plane.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that, I mean, just because you might be able to, flying around saying, this plane provided by XYZ just probably doesn't send a great message for the United States.
No, but yeah. I do think it's very in keeping with the Trump administration. And unfortunately, I think the plane is actually a distraction for the amount of sort of personal dealings that happen during this entire trip for the Trump family.
Yeah, very concerning all around. Let's move on to...
But you'd take it.
I mean, well, I would take it. But no, I would never.
I just, that's not public service in my mind,
that's right?
So President Biden, Joe Biden, was diagnosed with an aggressive form of prostate cancer this week.
Yeah.
Hearts go out to him and to the Biden family. Also, more bad news for President Biden, Jake Tapper's book about the alleged cover-up of Biden's declining...
Actual cover-up.
I agree.
There's a legend in there.
I agree.
Yeah.
A cover-up of the president's declining mental health over and cognitive abilities over the last year of his presidency. And it's really some troubling stories coming out about that.
The active steps taken to steer him into certain meetings or this or that, or have somebody make sure he could get off stage or make sure meetings were held at certain times of day or not held with certain individuals just to try and prop him up.
Yeah.
And I kind of look at this and I hear folks complaining about, you know, Elon Musk and who's really running the government. And then you look back at this and go, but seriously, the same people complaining about Elon Musk, where were they when they were potentially part of this cover up?
Yeah, I think I would just say there feels to be a difference to me when somebody paid $230 million to see someone elected and then has an unelected role in government, as opposed to people who are public servants that didn't have this sort of same investment in making sure that they were there pulling the strings, for example. But I will say, I don't think this is excusable. I feel like pretty on the record that I was unhappy with the direction that we were going and Biden's decision to run again. I also just have to say how difficult and devastating this must be. And we've lost, prominent figures in political life here in Utah recently to cancer. And I just know how deeply this touches families. So I would just say it's important to get your health screenings and just absolute, condolences for this kind of news. It's terrible.
Yeah. And there was a nice statement from leaders across the aisle in support of President Biden in this time of, of challenging health circumstances.
Yeah, including Donald Trump.
Yeah.
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 Well, but I'm just going to note, this goes, to the broader picture. This goes to why there is, I think, increasing skepticism in government and the honesty of government. I mean, decades ago, you used to feel like you could trust the government when it said something. And now it doesn't matter which side of the aisle you're on. It looks like there's things that one party or another party, one individual, another individual is trying to cover up, hide, leverage government to their advantage, whatever it might be, which causes cynicism in the public.
Yeah,
most definitely. And, and public's trust and confidence in their government is at all-time lows. And it's really troubling for the future of our country. Speaking of which, I would say another betrayal. We see, the stock markets had a turbulent 5 months with tariffs and being imposed and being retracted. And
you and your modest statements.
To learn this week that members of the president's cabinet were trading on that information. I'm a strong believer that members of Congress and appointed officials should not even own individual stocks, that, invest in mutual funds and invest in index funds, but they shouldn't own individual stocks because they come into so much information that they can trade on for their own personal benefit. And to see that they had sold stock in companies, in Trump stock and other companies, when they found out about tariffs that were going to be imposed or other things that would impact the market, they're profiting off of their jobs. And when somebody profits off of selling stock based on insider information, somebody else is losing.
Yeah.
That was America's retirees who saw their 401ks decimated. And somebody else had sold out and profited off of that.
Yeah, I think this is also a good time to remind listeners that this is the richest cabinet of all time. So when we think about the current negotiations that are underway to ensure that billionaires and the very top 1% of this country sees a tax break on the back of Americans losing health care, food benefits. This is, I couldn't agree with you more. This is the fleecing of Americans. And I think that there is such a conflict of interest here when we see individuals in the cabinet raking in cash based on the chaos that's being forced by the actions of this president.
I think there's a difference here. Ben, when you talk about insider trading, I'm absolutely opposed to that. You should not be profiting off of confidential or non-public information because of your position. When it comes to different issues like tax policy, I'm the first one to say, you know, the government spends too much. Let's cut what the government's doing, federal government's doing. Let's cut taxes. Let's balance the budget. You know, all that. I do not see that in the same vein as, you know, insider trading. To me, what we need to be focusing on is how do we make sure we've got a strong economy, which a big part of that to me is balancing the budget, cutting spending, cutting taxes, you know, getting rid of regulation to unleash the economy.
Yeah, I think I'm just here to say we're being ruled by oligarchs and the consequences of that are devastating.
Well, and speaking of, you know, tax policy and what's about to come into effect, the House of Representatives is hoping to pass before Labor Day the budget bill, right? Yeah. That'll then send it to the Senate. What do we think about that?
They actually had to work over the weekend in committee, right?
Yeah,
they
exactly.
had a vote on Sunday. So
yeah.
They're having votes in the middle of the night because they do not want the American people to see what they're doing.
You got C-SPAN. You can watch it whenever, but you know,
okay.
I don't think that's hiding it from the American people.
You don't think there's scheduling hearings for 1 a.m. is intentional?
Well, they got a 15-hour hearing. I mean, it's going night and day.
Excuses,
they're desperately trying to get a deal put together.
I think
and so that's what's going on.
Yeah, a lot to happen in a few short days. I think the American people still don't understand exactly what's in that budget bill, and we'll find out, I guess, after it passes. And
yeah.
So,
I would say this is the time to call your representatives if you're concerned about, again, tax breaks for billionaires being paid for. And I should say, and not at all addressing the deficit. The current bill as it is does not at all address the deficit.
$3 trillion.
While cutting critical care for folks in this country. Is unacceptable to me. And I think a lot of our listeners have some concerns here, whether it's on the deficit side or on the cutting, you know, critical program side. So please let your representatives know.
Well, and there's some good things in the bill that I've seen, but there's stuff that I think is garbage.
Yeah.
I mean, the SALT deduction. I mean, I thought it was a good step to bring it down to 10K. I mean, this is one of those things that rewards wealthy folks in
high tax states.
Yep.
Okay. So capping it, I thought was a good idea. So now floating that up to, I think they're talking about $20,000 for an individual and $30,000 or $40,000 for a family. I don't think that's good policy. I mean, I want to cap the SALT. I want to get it as low as possible. So it's not, you know, one of those things that rewards high tax states.
Yeah. Well, and I'm going to agree that the debt is unsustainable. The deficit is unsustainable. Washington has to get their house in order. And there are a lot of hard decisions to make, but this Congress and this bill and this president doesn't seem to be making those hard decisions. It's just deciding who's going to benefit and who's going to pay the cost.
Yep.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm with Shireen Gourbani and John Dougal. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on Utah Public Radio. We love to hear from listeners like you. If you would like to send us a comment, email BSOTAPodcast@gmail.com. That's BSOTAPodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Shireen Gourbani on the left.
John Dougal on the right.
And I'm Ben McAdams in the political middle. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. Well, let's go ahead and start with some local news now. John, you spent the weekend doing what?
Well, it wasn't quite the weekend, but
okay.
Yeah, a large part of Saturday was at the Republican State Convention.
Yes.
Ooh, yippee.
Take us in the room. Tell us what that's like.
Well, that's usually like, in this case, you know, 2,500 of your closest friends, and it's an organizing convention, so you're picking party leadership, party chair, vice chair, secretary, treasurer, that type
no
of
races,
thing.
No races, no candidates per se. On
no
the case.
No yeah. candidates. It's all about the officers that are going to run the party for the next 2 years. And we had a heated contest for, especially for party chair. So this is Rob Axon versus Phil Lyman. And so that was the big race, and it was really too close to call. And to add to the fun, since I just graduated from law school, I was also studying for the bar exam. So I was trying to multitask and maximize my time there and minimize my wasted time in convention. I was there to vote for the officers. And didn't really want to waste my time as they'd spend a half an hour talking about how they want to shuffle the agenda.
Yeah. So you said too close to call, but in fact, there was a call. And I would love for
ultimately,
you to tell us a little bit about
ultimately,
who is...
Rob Axon won re-election as party chair. He is a guy who used to work for Mike Lee. He's an amazing leader. He used to be party vice chair when Derek Brown was the party chair. He stepped into the chair role. He's done a great job over the last 2 years. He got re-elected. But it was a tight race, 52-48. And some some will say, well, he doesn't support the caucus convention system. I've seen Rob do more to support the caucus convention system in his 2-year tenure, you know, the presidential preference poll, getting behind and with money and volunteers to help with the convention winners, and so forth, than pretty much anybody since we've had the dual path. And so it was interesting. And then Phil was continuing his scorched earth over his failed gubernatorial campaign and his dishonesty in terms of promulgating things that I'm pretty sure he knows are false. But you know, he doesn't want to be honest with folks about where he had his chance to contest the race back April of last year and is just promulgating that forward.
Yeah. So I think this is interesting because as an outsider to your party, I think it was a surprise to me to see that Donald Trump had endorsed the winner of this race. In fact, not endorsed Feld Lyman, which I think is curious, right? From my perspective, it seems like Phil Lyman, who received a pardon from Donald Trump, who sort of presents himself in a more Trumpian way. But to me, what this says is, again, that the Republican GOP in this state is the party of Trump, is largely in line with the president. Now, there was a little good news here, and that the convention also voted on a resolution, I believe, to not support a third term for president, which is good to see.
So there was a resolution to say, well, we do not support President Trump running for a third term.
For a third term.
And that did not pass.
That did not pass.
So I'm just going to back up.
Okay,
so,
please do.
So key job of the party chair is to fundraise and run the party, but mostly fundraise.
Yeah.
Build the party, if you will.
Yeah.
Okay.
So and do it for other people, right? Essentially, you're not there to like build your own kingdom.
No.
You're there to support the
party, the candidates. Yeah.
Make sure phone banks happen. Make sure.
Exactly.
Yep.
So this is what Rob has been doing over the last 2 years. Okay. So Trump endorsed Rob for re-election. Mike Lee endorsed him.
Yeah.
You had all sorts of other very conservative folks endorse Rob. Mike was called Judas, a sellout. You know, other folks are learning that they're now considered establishment, even though a month ago they were
wild outsiders.
Wild outsiders. Now they are considered part of the establishment as a result of this. And so it wasn't really about principle for some of these folks that were calling names. It was just, okay, a lot of folks were looking to say, okay, who is going to build the party? And Rob has a much better record and a much better vision of how to build the party. And so I think that's why so many, quote unquote, leaders in the state
coalesced behind him.
So Governor Cox and Lieutenant Governor Henderson did not attend the convention.
I did not see him.
And I saw a news article just saying that they didn't attend. Is that typical or would they, you know, when I was mayor, when I was in Congress, that was something you always went to. And I was surprised to see that they weren't there.
So I would say usually they attend, but not always. I mean, Mitt Romney occasionally attended, but didn't always attend. And sometimes you'll attend, but you won't actually speak because of how the agenda gets shuffled and there's no time. Like in this case, we were supposed to have the candidates first, then we were supposed to vote, then officials were supposed to speak before we got into other party business. They flipped it around. And so it was other party business, then the candidates, then the vote. And so by the time we had elected officials speaking, it was pushing 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And lots of folks were like, okay, I voted. I'm out of here. I don't have another round of voting, so I'm done.
Actually, I think that's right. I don't know that I made it to every convention. You're oftentimes, you know, out of town or whatever. So that actually makes sense to me. So Senator Mike Lee made some news this week with legislation about obscenity, right? That building on the work that Utah's done with pornography, and creating an Interstate Obscenity Definition Act. I assume that'll be well received in Utah?
I would assume so.
Yeah, so I think what this does is there's a three-pronged definition around obscenity. And what this does is really hone in on one piece of that to further define I would say in a much more broad way, understanding of what could fall into this category. And it refers to actual or simulated sexual acts, the objective of or intent to arouse, titillate, gratify the sexual desire of a person. What I find challenging about this is, in my time, and I'm actually here with a number of people with law degrees, but I studied gender studies, among other things. I think it's very difficult to put a pin on what would fall into a category like this. I remember my queer theory professor saying, you know, heteronormativity is a house that no one lives at. When you think about what drives people's sexual desires, the range is far too complicated to capture in something like this. How this would be actually deployed, or how this would work in practice, feels very nebulous to me. But the other thing that I would say is, for as wrapped around the axle as people in this state are, and I think Mike Lee might fall into this category around pornography and the negative impacts of it, which I can largely agree with, we do very little to educate people on how to navigate safe and reasonable education for children to understand when they see these things, how to even engage in conversations around the reality or non-reality of what they're seeing, and really to develop a healthier filter and relationship to knowing what really isn't for you, you know, and how to navigate these, I think, spaces where kids are and young people are encountering more and more sexually explicit content all the time. We give very, very little tools to parents to help navigate those conversations. So I'd really rather see more of a true public health focus on this, as opposed to trying to tighten up these definitions with really a very difficult road to any enforcement.
Yeah, I've liked what some of the stuff that the state of Utah has done by empowering parents and children to make informed decisions, by some of the age and consent type legislation on social media. As a parent of four kids, I know it's hard to supervise. You're never going to protect them from all of the content online, but allowing them to take control over that seems like a much better approach than trying to define exactly what
it
might
look
like.
And it would be even better if we help parents understand how to engage in meaningful conversations at age-appropriate stages.
Well, and part of this, one of the prongs, talks about lack of serious artistic value.
Yeah.
And I just came back from Florence, Italy.
Oh.
So you know, let's just describe the statues there are kind of different than, you know, the statues I see walking around in Utah.
I think that's right.
So, you know, it's...
But artistic, has artistic value.
Yeah.
But for some, who defines that, and where's that line?
Difficult. Yeah.
Well, can we turn for a second to some of the political rumor mill? So there was press this week about Jason Chaffetz perhaps exploring a run for governor in 2028. Mm-hmm. I hear a lot of rumor mills about the Salt Lake City mayor's race that is still 2.5 years away. Mayor Mendenhall isn't even halfway through her second term.
What are you running for, Ben?
I am not running for anything. So
I don't think any of us are.
Although, I do hear plenty of rumors about me too. But to be clear, I'm not running for anything.
Yeah.
But tell us about Jason Chaffetz. Is that it sounds like he's opened up a PAC, and he started to take some of the money in his federal PAC and transfer it over to a state PAC. I guess it's hard to say at this point. He hasn't declared anything, but is that something, or are people starting to gear up and look at this 2028 governor's race?
I mean, it seems early from my perspective, but you know, Jason's name has been out there for quite a while. Some were speculating whether he might run last cycle. He had said he was not. But I think it's maybe one of the worst kept secrets that he's considering it and eyeing it. So there's a lot of strengths that he brings.
Like what?
You know, he's got a proven record. He was in Congress for a while, stuff like that. I think one of the negatives he has is he stepped down early from Congress.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And caused a lot of cost to the state to deal with that replacement.
Yeah.
As he then took a well-paying job at Fox News.
Yeah.
So that's one of the negatives. But one of the positives, I mean, he was chief of staff for Governor Huntsman. He was in Congress, was in the Oversight Committee. So there's various positives that he has as well. He's got a great name ID across the state. And so that bodes well in terms of a statewide campaign.
Yeah.
So Arlen Bradshaw, longtime member of the Salt Lake County Council, beloved member of the Salt Lake County Council, announced also that he's stepping down. He's taking a job as a deputy mayor for Mayor Wilson.
Yeah.
And so there's a race afoot to replace him. A lot of names coming forward. One name that I was disappointed that I did not see on that list was Shireen Gorbani. and I'm still working on her, but I've gotten a hard no from that too.
That's going to be a no for me. But I do think that these are interesting opportunities, right? Because you get to see, often it's, so it's a delegate vote, right? And so you get to see people who've really gotten involved in the party often, people who sometimes bring, I think, really important experience to the table. So this can be, it'll be fun to see. As we're kind of thinking, go ahead.
And I got one other race I want to mention. Jeff Moss is stepping down from the House.
Right.
Yeah.
So you've got two races there, one to replace him as majority leader and one to replace him in the legislature.
Yeah.
And that'll happen here soon too. So he's taken a job to run the Governor's Office of Economic Opportunity, right? So leaving the legislature, moving to the executive branch and working for Governor Cox. He's somebody I don't know him well, but seems well-respected by both Democrats and Republicans. I saw the Democratic caucus put out a statement congratulating him on that appointment. So it seems like a solid choice for Governor Cox.
Well, I mean, I think it's interesting when you see the how difficult it is, right, to be in the executive, I think, here. See somebody move from the legislature over to the executive branch. That's somebody who knows what they're getting into.
Yeah.
So I just want to give a quick shout out to a listener, Sophia, who stopped me and said hi the other day. And I think you've had a couple recently,
I've had
too,
several
John.
Over the last few weeks that have reached out to say they really enjoy the show.
Yeah, listeners, we really appreciate you.
Yeah, so please say hello if you see us out and about town. So you've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Ben McAdams. I've been joined by Shireen Gourbani and John Dougal. Thank you to our producer, Anthony Scoma, who's with us here in person today, Anthony Scoma Esquire.
Yes, so
and thank
excited.
You to
just
you.
Just graduated from law school as well.
Yes. And thank you to you, our listeners.